Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Josh Davis is the international best-selling author of Two Awesome Hours and a certified trainer, master practitioner of NLP. He earned his PhD from Columbia, where he studied psychology and neuroscience. He's the founder and director of the Science-Based Leadership Institute. His writing has appeared in Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, and leading business and academic journals, and his contributions have been covered by major various news sources. Greg Promushkin was born in Moscow. At the age of 11, he immigrated to the United States with his parents, settling in Philadelphia. He grew up, growing up in a new country, he developed a passion for learning that has stayed with him throughout his entire life. After practicing law for 10 years, he embraced entrepreneurship and ventured into many fields outside of the legal field. His zest for learning remains a core part of his life. He is actively pursuing new skills and insights on a near daily basis. They are the authors of their new book, The Difference That Makes the Difference, a USA Today bestseller. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, excited to have you guys on. Tell us a little about your personal lives, more about your work, and what motivated you to put pen to paper and write the book.
Yeah, you know, the simple answer is Greg motivated me to do it. But, you know, years ago, when I first got into NLP, funny thing is just that I wasn't just loving what I was discovering in terms of how I understood myself better and how I could, you know, learn new skills, but I really fell in love with the idea of teaching NLP. I can't say why. It was one of those things where I just like, wow, this is, it just feels like the right place to be. I'm a teacher professionally. I've taught everything. I've taught high school, college, you know, executive education. I just love figuring out, I love doing it. I love the live interaction and the improv, everything about it. Even the parts I don't like, you know, there's something I like about it. So writing the book, this was an extension of that. I mean, this was a chance to really go deep with it. You've probably heard that the best way to learn something is to teach it. So I got to explore NLP in a way I hadn't even after all these years with it. But no, I mean, Greg showed up. He's like, he takes one of the classes I'm teaching and he says, "Hey, I got an idea for you." And I loved what he was suggesting that we teach together, but I was like, we don't need to write a book. But he's a very persuasive guy. And then here we are.
And here we are.
So, George, I view my life as an adventure. You know, I came here when I was a little kid, 11 years old in 1979. I'm 57 now. And, you know, I can track my life. It started when I came here from Russia. It was back then the Soviet Union. And it was a very secular state. You were taught from the moment you were born, there is no God. You live in a material world. So success was defined as getting as much material shit as you can get, and then you win, right? And so when I came to this country, that was my frame. That was my map of the world. And I did everything in my power to get as much stuff as I could possibly get. Right. And then I got to a point where I realized stuff just, you know, you get a lot of stuff, but it just, it's not as much fun just having stuff. There's got to be other stuff in addition to the stuff. Right. So I started pursuing other things. I started doing crazy stuff, ayahuasca, hallucinogenics. And one of the things I encountered along the way was NLP, and NLP was terrific. It just changed my life. It changed my life. And one of the things NLP did for me early, it gave me a paradigm of the world where learning is good, that as long as I'm learning and growing, I'm succeeding. And with that frame, I took Josh's class. It was public speaking through NLP. And, you know, I've been a trial lawyer for about 27 years at that point. So I speak for a living. I've I've also been involved in a lot of businesses, which I've used NLP in to succeed. So I took Josh's class with no preconceptions. Just I said, you know what? If I get one little nugget out of it, it's a win for me. And we started speaking with Josh, with Joe, and he was like, you know, man, I'm ready for something else. I'm just ready to do something else. And I, for a long time, I believe that NLP is part of everyone's life. We just don't know what it is. We all use NLP. And lawyers speak the talk all the time. They say, you got an NLP, you got a mirror, you got to do this, you got to do that. But nobody really explains to them what they're actually doing. And I said, Josh, I think if we can demystify this science into explainable, easily digestible theory, it's going to help a lot of people. And that's why we wrote the book, really. It's just to help people to give back a little bit, because we feel that this technology is so mystified in the academic world. If you read the earlier books, they're terrific. But for a guy like me, who is just like a business guy, it's impossible to read. It's just so clinical. Whereas we try to make our book accessible to everyone.
And how was the process of writing? Because Josh, you're a writer. Were you a writer before, Greg?
I wrote a really shitty book on Amazon called Tequila Assassin, which I was really proud of. And I think I may have sold like 20 copies, and it was really, really, really bad. But, you know, and after that, Josh and I, it was really interesting because we kind of split up responsibilities. He took the science and I took the practical application, and I worked out really well because Josh really knows how to explain every one of these concepts. And I can say, well, they work because here's how I applied them in my life and it worked for me.
It was actually, there's a little bit of, I think because we used NLP as we were going, right? We kind of had these ideas in mind. If you read the first third of the book, we got these presuppositions, these beliefs you should just presuppose all the time that come from NLP. Like, there's no failure, only feedback. The meaning of my communication is the response I got, not what I intended. You know, my reality and your reality are not necessarily the same. I need to understand your reality if I want to help you change. So we were kind of honoring what we're teaching, right? And it's fresh in our minds because we're teaching it. And so what would happen is, you know, maybe Greg would start a chapter or I would start a chapter, either way, then the other one would get it. And, you know, it was so nice to be able to have someone say, well, wait a second, I don't really get this, or this could really use an example, or, you know, so that kind of thing would happen. Or sometimes like, hey, you know what, I kind of want to have fun with this part of it. And so we started give each other these little assignments. So it ended up being like, I really didn't expect it to work out as well as it did. I don't know what I expected in terms of that, but I kept finding that as I'd have conversations with Greg, we'd get to these places where I would quickly come to realize, hey, you know, we don't need that idea in the book. We don't need this idea in the book. You're right. You know what? Okay. Yeah, actually, I thought I had it good enough, but now that you say that, let me think about it. Right. Or, hey, Greg, can you give me an example in this specific context? And it was like a conversation, and then we could go back and make it into one voice. But it was, you know, from the very beginning, from what we want, like why the book mattered, which was to democratize NLP, make it so anyone can apply it, to what pieces of NLP to include, to what stands up well enough to research, what needs an example, is it accessible? As Greg likes to say, have we dumbed it down enough? You know, all of those things, because we had this dialogue and we're both showing up with our best NLP attitudes, we were able to, I don't know, very quickly, like get to this place. Like it was running. It was one of those, you know how when you're like, when things are firing on all cylinders, writing this book was like that. It was one of those projects where it was like, it was clicking.
That's a beautiful thing for sure.
And maybe, George, we should explain to the listeners what NLP is, because we're talking about NLP. And we're not really giving him context, and we should. And the way it works for us so far, and if that's okay with you, is Josh gives us the explanation for the 80% who are really smart, and I come in and explain it for the rest of us.
Perfect.
So I'll start then, and then you can come in and do that. So NLP stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. And we'll come back to the name, because the name I don't think is actually terribly helpful. And it was created 50 years ago in a different context, in a different world, but we can still come back to it. But what we've got are a collection of tools that are very effective for helping someone to make changes quickly and in a lasting way. These are not things we invented. These are things that are, you know, time tested for 50 years. One of the things we've done in the book is to show how research supports these, each of the things that we've included, so or doesn't in a couple of cases. The reason they're so effective is because it was at a time, you know, if you go back to the 60s and 70s, you have all these new psychotherapies coming out. And people are experimenting with cognitive therapy, hypnotherapy, gestalt therapy, family therapy, ACT, whatever, you know, it's like, and I don't know if they all had these names yet, but the beginnings of all these therapies were happening. And it was very clear to quite a few people that the results that they're getting were more effective and much quicker, and often more lasting than older forms of therapy. Not in every case, but in many contexts. And so at the time, many psychotherapists, my parents included, wanted to figure out what are they doing? And the approach was simply you go and observe or watch videotapes and try to copy it. And in NLP, you've got a linguist and his partner, and they're coming in and say, let's look not at the content and just copying, let's look at the form. And so not only did they do an amazing job and get the endorsements of the people that they were studying, like an amazing job of figuring out what are the critical things to pay attention to and what things do you not need to pay attention to. The language that these therapists are using, the language they're picking up on, the body language. They went around teaching it, but they also created a system for unpacking it, for very quickly breaking down what are the mental models of these therapists. What do they believe? How do they think of themselves? What do they do? What do they do in certain cases where they get stuck? How do they, and so forth. And so they're able to actually teach this tool of modeling, of figuring out someone's mental model. And that's the essence. So there's a number of specific techniques in NLP and beliefs, and we teach those. But at its core, it's all about creating a mental model of the person that you're interacting with, or yourself, if you're trying to change yourself. Once you do that, it becomes oftentimes transparent what you need to change. And it's not like one thing needs to change. Like if you're trying to become someone who's organized, it's not that there's a list of things to do. For each person in each context, it'll be different, but there's one process for figuring out what will be the difference that will make the difference for you in this context. And it's this process of identifying the mental model. So the tools of NLP, they help you quickly identify the mental model, and they help you experiment with changing it or invite somebody else to experiment with changing.
The way I try to explain it is through a metaphor. Our brain is a computer. And it runs programs. It runs a program when we deal with our family. It runs a program when we deal with our friends. It runs a program when we deal with business. And I mean, the best way to, you know, run Word to speak to your kids and wife, Excel for business, and Teams for friends. The problem is there's two ways to use a program. There's the intended way, or just go in there and try to figure it out. And that's what we do. We're born without an instruction manual. So we go in and we learn how to use these programs by default. And we usually get it wrong because we don't know what we're doing. There are people out there who wrote the best manual for every program. How to be the best husband, how to be the best dad, how to be the best podcaster, how to be the best therapist, how to be the best lawyer. And our trick is to go and find these people and model their beliefs, their actions, and their words. And if we do that, then there's a belief in NLP that says, if it's possible for anyone in the world, it's possible for me. So theoretically, if we do what they do, we're never going to be as good as George and his podcast, but we can probably get close if we do what he does.
And when Greg says do, we're also talking about how you think of yourself, what you do when there's setbacks, You know, what are your beliefs about what's possible and what causes what? What do you value? What's important to you? What's important to you about showing up the way that you do? That's in addition to the behaviors, the actual concrete steps and the capabilities you have, and even how you interact in your environment. These are all kinds of things that we're unpacking with. What do you do to be good?
So it's a suite of tools that allow me to interpret relationships, navigate the world, help to better understand, help to enact change.
Yeah.
And many of this is language. It's thinking.
And when you say thinking, a lot of times in NLP, people will talk about how you talk to yourself. So it's the language that others use. You can give you clues, the language you use with others, but also how you talk to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And what I had in my mind is somebody trying to open kind of an ancient container that has all these spinning dials for combinations.
Nice.
And if I try and do the same combination to unlock for everybody, it's not going to work. But if I understand how to break a code, then I can use different techniques or combinations to get through to somebody or to better understand them.
Really nice image.
It's NLP is in essence two things. It's how you think and how you act. You start with certain presuppositions, like resident memory programs that are always active. One of them is my map of reality is different than yours. So you and I can go into the same party and I can have the best time and you're going to have the worst time, not because I'm a fun guy and you're not a fun guy, but because we have different filters through which we view reality. So step one is I need to understand your filters, right? If I know George is a active hiker, you know, I shouldn't take him to play chess to try to get a result. I should meet him at his world. Another belief that we have resident is everybody does what they do for a good reason. It's so if somebody's breaking my balls, they're not doing it because it's me. They're doing it because there's something going on in their world that it satisfies a need. So if I can understand what that need is, then I'm more likely to come into their world, into their map of reality, and enact some kind of a change. And there, Josh, how many beliefs are there that...
Well, we put 8 in the book. I mean, there's more. They're all variations on a theme, I think, after a certain point. But I think we've put in 8 of the presuppositions because we think they pretty much cover the territory, at least give a flavor of the territory of things that are really useful to walk into any situation with.
So, George, how useful would it be if we always had the belief that if it's possible for everyone in the world, it's possible for me? And we followed that up with another belief that I have what it takes within me to take the next step to get there. And the next step could be real simple. For example, if George can be a podcaster, that means Josh can be a podcaster. While Josh can be a podcaster today, he certainly has the ability to go on Amazon and buy a book, How to Be a Podcaster. Then he's got the ability to read the book. Then he's got the ability to get the equipment, and so on and so on. So that's part one of NLP. When you have these beliefs instilled in you at all times, you are a lot more flexible. And the more flexible you are, that's also a belief in NLP, the more effective you're going to be, the more flexible you are in the encounter, the more things coming your way you can handle. It makes you more, you know, more better at everything. Life, work, play.
Well, that makes a ton of sense. I wrote down martial arts for relationships and thinking.
Nice.
You know, because it's not obvious that I would understand how to do the things that you just talked about. It's very logical how you laid out the progression. If it's possible for one human being on earth, it's possible for me to do that. And I am capable of reading and I'm capable of putting information into practice. So if I follow these steps, then I will be getting more of what I want or better. But trying to apply my map of the terrain onto everybody else is just, it's the clumsy opposite of what I just said. So understanding how to orient yourself and how to use the tools that are available, or just understanding that there are tools available, then understand how to put them into practice. That makes a lot of sense. So I think you mentioned that was the first part of it.
Mark took the actual tools, and Josh is the guy to talk to about that, because we did a we flew to Vegas. There was a trial lawyer university seminar there, and what trial lawyers often do, they teach each other to take the POV, or the point of view of the person you are interacting with. You know, they'll look at the world through their eyes, which is great, but you got to know how to do it. And in NLP, it's called second person perspective. And Josh can take you through a short process and put you into the eyes of another person. And at that point, I cede the floor to Dr. Davis.
Yeah. It's so, I mean, I suppose we could right now, but we'd end up using the rest of our time doing that. It'd be kind of a cool experience. So you let me know, George, if you want to like actually guide the audience through a bit of that right now. But what I can say also is, even though you can say like, okay, well, what would right now, George, you can be thinking about somebody else. You're like, oh, I really need to communicate to so-and-so. I'm struggling to get this message across, or someone I need to sell something to, or I don't know what it is, but you have some reason you really want to reach this person.
There's a thousand running through my mind right now.
Perfect. Perfect. And the thing is, you can choose any of them because stuff does generalize. You're just practicing a skill, and you can say, well, what would that person think? And that actually is different. What would they think is still you in your mental model of the world, projecting yourself onto them. When you allow yourself to take the second person perspective, in NLP, we'll do some things. We can use some hypnotic language, for example, just to help you be open to the idea of really stepping into their shoes, feeling what it's like to be them, looking through their eyes, breathing in sync with them. If you can imagine them breathing, taking on their facial expressions. And as you do that, then speaking in the first person perspective, and there's research showing that when you take someone else's perspective, you actually allow yourself to be open to different ideas. You have new connections that you're making in your mind. The brain is a series of, you know, pattern recognition systems, especially the unconscious mind. And you have new things, like new networks in the brain that are being kind of like activated more easily. You step into that perspective, and then you take the first person language. You are more likely to deeply associate into that perspective. So it's your own brain, but you actually will access different. It's like nothing's ever a guarantee, but it's extremely likely you're going to access different information if you let yourself do this. And this is the kind of thing that's been shown in research for taking another person's perspective, taking the perspective of another point in time, of a different point in place, you know, yourself in the past, yourself in the future. So, you know, when you can go into that place of the other person and then say, what is important to me in this context? And just be open to what comes up. Because if you already know it, it's not as useful, right? Because it won't be as new and as different. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Now, in the abstract, people can probably say, yeah, sure, I get it, right? And then there's something else from experiencing it. And if people do want to, we have a recording of this precise thing on our website. So on NLPdifference.com, if people want to go and be guided through it. In the book, we teach people how to take themselves through it in one of the chapters. It's just kind of one of many tools. But that's the kind of thing that it takes people beyond where they usually have ever gone before in terms of really being able to empathize and connect in a meaningful way with another person and meet them on their level. Because what a lot of the tools boil down to is you have to, in every interaction, we have to earn the right to influence. It doesn't matter how good your past is, right? You've got some baseline, great. But if you come in and the other person is, you know, distracted, or they're in some emotional state, or their mind is elsewhere, or they're frustrated with you, or they're frustrated, you know, whatever it is. If you come in and you kind of deny that reality, you're just like, oh, come on, get over it, right? Now, occasionally, sure, that's the right thing. Some people just need to be snapped out of it, right? But a lot of the time what's happening is you're essentially saying, I don't respect where you're coming from. And that shuts people down. And we can meet them where they are in their reality in so many different ways. A lot of it actually is nonverbal too. If you're just tend to be like kind of moving in sync with someone and you're using similar language, when people like each other, their language drift towards one another. This is a documented thing, you know, like when you can do that, you kind of open doors. If somebody is, it's not like you have to spend hours empathizing with someone, but you know, if Greg comes in and he's just like, this is the stupidest idea, we can't put this in the book. And I'm just like, you know, you're an idiot. Trust me. Right. He's going to be less likely to trust me. Well, I'm just like, okay, stupid. How, what's wrong with it? Right. That like, okay. I also don't want stupid things in the book, you know, right. If I can find some way to meet his reality and just, it's not that I'm becoming a chameleon. It's that I'm respecting his world. And I'm letting him know by saying, well, I'm going to step into your world with you a bit. And so this is one of the things that this second person perspective does very quickly and powerfully, is that it enables you to richly join somebody where they are, even if you're just doing it in your mind. And you could be wrong, but it's going to be terribly useful.
An example, I took my daughter. She started University of Tennessee 2 weeks ago. So we drove our minivan from Philly, and we're going to drop it off in Knoxville and fly back. So I remember my wife and my son were moving my daughter into the dorm, and I decided to take the rental back to I'm not going to say the name of the agency. And I walked in, and this woman was miserable, man. She just was. I could tell. She was having a day. And I'm thinking, this can go one of two ways. You know, I can mirror back what she's giving me, or I can do this. I said, listen, I can see it's only 8 o'clock. You're already having a horrible day. So I don't want to add to it. I'll just stand here quietly until you're ready for me. And that changed everything, George. She just, you know, just the fact that I appreciated she was having a rough day, she went above and beyond. And that's what we're talking about. Sometimes what people are giving us, we need to go a little deeper to see why are they doing it. Because most of the time, they're not doing it at our expense. They're doing it at their own. And if we can appreciate and honor where they're coming from, that's how we earn the right to say, well, maybe there is a better way. Rather, like Josh said, coming in and saying, listen, you're being a pain in the ass. You're not being nice. I'm the customer. I'm right. Do your goddamn job. And I bet you if I did that, the reaction would show, you know, she'll probably find some scratches on the side of the door that Ivy probably built a few $100 when I got home.
I think that that's such a powerful, what both of you just shared, the second person perspective. So important, the idea that you have to have the right to influence. If we all took that perspective into our daily lives, I think, wow, what a difference that would certainly make. From the communication with the person at the rental car place to our spouses, to our kids, to our business partners and everywhere else, it's just people we're coming into contact with. And it demands that we are respectful and that we are empathetic and that we need to earn the right to have influence, to get our way, to get our point across, instead of just what I think most of us observe today is nobody's listening to anybody at all. Nobody's been very respectful to anybody. And that's why we're getting a lot of the conflict that we're seeing. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, beautiful. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you? Most importantly, where can they get their copy of The Difference That Makes a Difference?
All right. NLPDifference.com. Come to the website. Greg created this awesome thing. It's an AI tool. You can talk to the book. It's like, hey, book, you know, what should I do in this context? And here, you know, whittled down that way. It's the book you can buy at any bookstore. We've got audio, Kindle, and paperback out. If you're doing the audiobook, then, you know, please allow yourself to, when we say, okay, call to mind a situation like this, just to hit the pause button for a second and reflect, because you get so much more out of it when you do. So just have that in mind that you're probably going to want to do that, which I've been doing lately. I'm listening to it. Somebody else reads it, some actor, but, you know, I've been doing that in the car and it works pretty well. So that's how they can get the book. Come play with the AI tool. And also, we've got some other resources on there, too, at nlpdifference.com.
And we truly believe that this book is a game changer for everyone. I feel so strongly about it. If anybody buys the book, I mean, really buys it and reads it, and says, I didn't get one takeaway out of it, have them email me, greg@nopdifference.com, and I will personally refund the $20 for the book.
Beautiful. I love it. That is certainly earning the right to influence right there, Greg. Perfect. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Josh and Greg your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to nlpdifference.com. Check out that AI tool. Pick up your copy of The Difference That Makes a Difference. And as you're going through it, just pause and take the time to actually put yourself in the shoes and go through the exercises. And I think you'll get a ton out of it. Thanks again, Josh and Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.